Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
A lot can happen in the next 3 years. Like a chatbot may be your new best friend. But what won't change? Needing health insurance. UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans are available for these changing times. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer budget-friendly, flexible coverage for people who are in between jobs or missed open enrollment. The plans last nearly 3 years in some states, with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. So for whatever tomorrow brings, UnitedHealthcare Tri-Term Medical Plans may be for you. Learn more at uh1.com.
Welcome to a really special episode of The Nero Show featuring Shane Miller, aka GP Lama. In this cycling tech deep dive, we're going to ask Shane how he would build a bike in 2024, what trends he can see coming down the line, and also what to look out for when you're actually buying cycling tech. But we're going to start with a chat just generically about some of the newer brands coming into the space and what is holding them back. All right, let's get into it.
One of the things I wanted to chat to you about, now that we're seeing the rise of some of these, if I want to say direct from Asia or non-mainstream Western brands come up, maybe 5-6 years ago, you would buy them if you're on a budget, but they were never really quite as good as the Western brands. Now, in specific categories like wheel sets and probably like some of the power meters, they are just as good, if not outperforming what's coming from the Western brands. But then what do you think's holding them back from, with your interactions with the brands, because you work a lot just chatting with the brands in particular, what's holding them back from coming out, like being shown more? Is there any stories you've had chatting with them?
I love you mentioned 5 to 6 years ago, because a lot of these brands are coming out with products that meet where the bigger players were at 5 or 6 years ago, which is typically good enough. They're great products. But I mean, talking about head units specifically, a lot of the feature sets you're seeing on these units, the IGP Sport 800, which I'm holding right here, that's where Garmin were about 5 or 6 years ago. Onto wheels around, and there's so many hoops being thrown out of China. It's insane. They all, for me, I've ridden iCan, Drive, XR from Machine. They all work pretty well. Just trying to think, the differentiators on them is, well, bearing quality, obviously. Build quality is pretty good. After sales, it's the, you know, replacement, the warranties people have to look at for those. Power meters, took a few years for the Chinese versions to get them right. And I was reviewing ones, and a lot of them were quite terrible early on. They got it right. Machine P505, Sugai do pretty well. XKD have some good units. So things out there, and they're now coming up to where we were 5 years ago with the big brands. So it's good to see, and they're quality products.
But would you say with what? So if we're saying, I specifically didn't say head units, because I've watched your video and Chris's chat about it. I agree. I mean, it doesn't seem like they're up there. But the wheel sets in particular, if money was no, doesn't matter, they're all the same price, I would probably say those CRW Racing Works wheels are up there with the best that currently exist. Power meters, are there any of the Asian, direct from Asia power meters that you would say are just as accurate as a Quark, for example? Are there brands that come to mind?
The testing that I've done, the P505 from Machine and the P505 base exceeded all expectations. And I think that was my video title on those. So they do really, really well. It hasn't given me any reason not to trust it. Early on, had some early units that didn't have active temperature compensation or something, but they were pre-release units. They've since solved all those issues. So, you know, taking aboard the feedback given to them. And they've worked really, really well. So they're surprising. And the price tag on those things, that's just insane. So that they are moving the needle by pushing the price tag right down and providing pretty much what 99.99% of people could use and benefit from. Mm-hmm. So they're really changing the market for the power meters. A few of the others are still trying. There is still differences between what's been marketed and what you actually are delivered, and that's across the board. And that's, I guess, one of the challenges that I have with my channel is, and we can talk about that a little bit more in depth later on, about the differences and how companies respond to that. When I find differences to their marketing. But yeah, Machine's power meters seem great. The wheel sets, I haven't had a lot of experience with other high-end wheel sets other than what I've just mentioned. But at the end of the day, when I close my eyes and I'm riding on a set of wheels that are 99% the same. I can't tell any difference. It's the tire pressures and the tires that I'm using and my own weight that makes a difference.
Mm. The handlebars come to mind too. I mean, those EXS bars that you've run, Chris, and the Fast Sports bars, they're just as good as the pro ones I have. So they're kind of matched in handlebars. But specifically in terms of getting them in front of us and seeing them more often, is there anything happening from, I guess, from their internal teams going out to people like you that's holding them back from being more common? Because I'm going, if they're just as good, why can't we be seeing more of them? And they're cheaper.
That's a good question. I think a lot of companies do the, you know, shotgun approach. They'll just send it to all the influencers. But then if you just get all the influencers parroting the tech specs and saying they're the best without any criticism, providing non-critical reviews, no one notices.
Mm-hmm.
Just make a good product. That's all companies need to do. It is a flooded market. There's a lot of good carbon coming out of China, and it's equivalent. But why would someone buy a XYZ handlebar versus a Zip handlebar or an Envy handlebar? Is it price? Is it warranty? Is it trustworthiness? Established brands, you've got to have a reputation. If a brand isn't known or haven't been validated, I guess, or non-destructive tested by Raulusha, you don't know. So there's the question mark over that. But at the end of the day, if a company makes a great product, it will be seen and be known. And if it fills a gap for people, if people aren't buying carbon bars, you can make the best carbon bar in the world. No one's going to buy it. No one's interested.
Mm.
Talking about Fevero, which I'm sure we'll talk about a lot today, Fevero were an unknown company 6, 7, 8, 9 years ago.
Yep.
They made billboards for sporting, like, you know, the baseball signs and home runs, blah, 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 or the shot clocks for basketball. That's what they made. Fevero came along and made a power meter, one that worked, was easy to install, addressed a market, a gap in the market of being cheaper. It worked. Users could install them themselves. The most complex part about installing a Fevero power meter is putting the cleats on your shoes. That's it. And they've been very, very successful. So these companies just need to stick to their guns, make a product that does work and not have too much of a gap between what they're selling and what they're delivering.
Yeah, that's interesting with Fevero in particular because they're not in the world tour. Because one of the answers that I've seen pop up is, well, this wheel set can't make it because it's not in the professional ranks and so it doesn't get the eyeballs, so it'll never make it. But Fevero's not ridden by professionals.
They have a team out of Italy and I think they have a few triathletes and things like that. But if you just simply fill a gap in the market with a great product at a great price, it'll do well by itself without any influences at all. I guess we can accelerate things, but just like a good review, a bad review, things just accelerate. If it's a bad review, the product is always going to be a bad product. If it's a good review, it's always going to be a good product. So what's in the Pro Tour is another whole discussion in itself. I mean, Campagnolo, where are they? Still a good product, I believe. Not a Campy fan myself, but they still exist. What's in the Pro Tour, though, is very different. That's all marketing. That's all. I mean, we see the Shimano power meters all through the Peloton. That's great. I wouldn't, and I can't use one for the work that I do. So, yeah, it's a bit telling there, too.
Yeah, there's a lot of brands there I think we can probably touch on as we go on. But just the Asioma thing real quick, because this one fascinates me. Yeah, we were there. I remember, Jesse, in 2020 when we were trying to get a power meter on because we were moved to a Campy mechanical group set and we're like, oh shit, what are we gonna do for power meters? And I remember suggesting, like, oh, there's these pedal ones that have just come out, and you're like, oh god, pedal yeah. ones, we all know how that ends, blah blah blah. And like, I actually had to kind of convince you, blah blah blah. We got them, and from day one, as you know, Shane, they've become the quote unquote gold standard.
If you're a business student at university, they were a company to do a case study on, coming out of nowhere, focusing on something, getting it right, but there's no magic sauce with what they do. They just got
so
it right.
So that's my question. What? Yeah. But there has to be, because I still ride power meters today that don't work. And these guys just nailed it. Like, what did they do?
I ride a lot of power meters that don't work. I know exactly where you're coming from. They just, again, they put, that's their one thing they do. They don't make group sets. They don't make trainers. They don't make wheels. They don't make anything else. They make power meters. That's it. The one job they do. And like SRM, that's all they do. Power to Max is another one. They make power meters. That's it. And typically we find companies that make just that one product. That's, I mean, if you don't get your one single product right,
yeah, then
it's going to be a problem. So they've done it well. And hats off to them as well. They've kept small. They're in full control. of their manufacturing process. So I had a sneaky tour of their facilities a couple of weeks back, unofficially, of course. I didn't get any footage or anything like that. It was last minute. I just happened to be in the area, and I literally was 20 kilometers away from where they were. So I've given them a call. They're also open as well. Stefano Favero sent him an email. 3 minutes later, yep, no worries. We'll send a taxi.
Yeah, wow.
Okay, no worries. It's like just open about what they do. And regardless of any reviews that are out there, my reviews of them are glowing because they work so well. Remove all of those. Look at the feedback that people, or the owners have them. Not a lot of people love a cycling product. They simply have it or tolerate it. There's a lot of love for that product out there. Mm. So it's one of those things, just like Varia radars, people love their Varia radars, whether you use one or not. I mean, there's big opinions on those, but it's one of the products that people love. And for me, I didn't see that coming, that people love them. They reviewed well, they do well. I use them as a tool, but it's just one of those products that work really, really well. So definitely a success story, but can be replicated in almost any other area of cycling. If a company follows the suit of get it right, do it cheap enough, not you know, in the stratosphere, and simply don't have a massive gap between what you're selling and what you're delivering. Because if you're delivering, if you're saying it is the most accurate power meter in the world, it is dual-sided, 1.5% has vector analysis, you know who I'm talking about here, and they deliver a product that doesn't do that, then, I mean, our audience is, they're educated, they know, they do their research, but not only at one source, they look at multiple sources too, and they just... It's just it. It's just being producing a great product. That's as simple as it gets.
And they're just not to make this a full Apple-y Asioma love in, but their website is just so well designed to be this is what our product is. This is what it does. From a support side of it, it's very easy to deal with. But it's illustrated very well. It's got really good graphics. It moves very well. It flows very well. You know what you're getting. It's just a perfect example of how I know they're not direct to consumer as such, but they almost feel like they are.
You can order direct from them. They will be. Yes, they are. So they're kind of both. I think with the Pro X is they're direct only for the moment, which have just opened up this week. People are receiving those. I can't wait to hear people's feedback on those to validate my review and others' reviews out there as well. Look, when you go to the Asioma website, you load up a website of a company that makes one product. So that's what they've got. If you go to, let's just say, SRAM's website, you've got to click a few places to get into their power meter side of things. If you go to SRM, again, it's a power meter company. You see the power meter on their website. But back to what Favero do with the communication, they brought out IAV, their cycling dynamics, effectively. Just a little graphic explaining what it does on the website. You can look at that and go, oh, I understand what that does. Right, next. Rather than have to do research or watch YouTube videos from people like me to understand what it actually does. So just presenting what you do clearly, precisely, and accurately, that is the secret sauce.
Because you're on a giant TCR, right? That's your bike. Giant TCR, Shimano
Di2? For road.
Right. What wheels do you run at the moment? Zips?
I have some 404s, NSWs. I have some Magin XRs, a few other sets floating around, but it's more about the tyres that I'm worried about. But yeah, 40 mil, 50 mil deep. I've got a set of 808s as well. Mm-hmm. They're overkill. Yep. They look great though.
Yeah, okay. That's pretty mainstream, Shane. That's pretty run of the mill. So maybe you might not have much for me, but so I'm doing one of my projects I'm working on is I'm building up a bike this year, but trying to stay away from Shimano. Giant, all the mainstream brands. Try and go a bit left field.
For
well, that's what I'm trying to ask you. In your experience, if you've used anything, do you have any? Can you consult me? What parts would you recommend I venture away from the mainstream brands for? Now, power meter is probably the main one. Anything else?
Okay, let's start with frame and wheels. Let's build up the base of the bike. I think there's a lot of good carbon coming out of China. Look at Joe over at Panda Podium. I mean, anything he's got listed there, I think he puts his heart and soul behind and trusts. So there's a lot of good stuff over there. So carbon coming out of China. I've got a Yoleo G21 gravel bike that I'm still to review. I've had it for about 6 months now. That's going fine. The delivery of that and the box it came in and its presentation out of the box was second to none. Absolutely unbelievable. So I think carbon-wise, you go with a frame, something like a Yoleo, or I mean, there's a number of other brands out there as well. Bars, same deal. As we mentioned before, there's quite a few good sets of bars you can choose from. Now, when it comes to the technology, I've personally stayed away from the non-mainstream group sets for a reason. I watch Trace Fellow, and I watch him deal with effectively beta testing what's coming out. The stuff seems good, but there's always the, oh, but at the end of the video, it's like, oh, but it did this or it did that, or the front derailleur died, or the rear derailleur died, or the battery did this, or the battery did that. Now, for me, for what I do, I can have a power meter fail, I can have a head unit fail. If I have a bike component fail out in the road, I get, well, my tolerance for that is very, very low. An example of that is I've got a classified hub, you know, the whole one and the
oh, you do have one of those.
Gives you another ratio.
Okay.
Oh, you've got one.
So, we can talk all day about that. Super cool tech. But when it doesn't work and you're stuck in 0.7 gear ratio a long way from home, it's a bit of a sad day. Bit of a cadence recovery effort all the way home for that. So technology is great until it doesn't work. That's why I've steered clear away of that. So I can't really recommend anything other than mainstream group sets. However, the lower end of the mainstream group sets are so cheap and work so damn well now. I mean, is it rival axis? Like right down to rival axis, is it apex axis now out? So I'm not across the very low end of that, the wireless stuff. If you're buying new, you're not buying secondhand, some good deals on Marketplace.
I have something in the works for my crank set, part of which will probably be secondhand just because I need the crank arms and everyone, because every man and his dog's changing his crank length. It's really easy to get secondhand crank arms.
What do you ride? 172s or 175s?
Yeah. So I don't think I've had any trouble getting those.
Everyone's on the 165 train now, aren't they?
Oh, 155. Let's go short. Let's spin. No, I would never go that low. So group sets, I wouldn't. It depends how much time you have in the day to call an Uber.
See, that's what I want to go. That's what I want to do, because I am 95% sure I'm going to get a direct from China group set, because I would love for your concern to be outdated and that it just works. So that's
okay. Yeah,
I'm going to test it.
And what you've touched on there is encompasses bike tech as a whole. It either works or it doesn't. And regardless of what the reviews say, it works or it doesn't. And if I was to put out a review that says something does work and it doesn't, that'd be called out pretty quick. My reputation shot. If I say something that doesn't work, vice versa. So I'd love to see that, absolutely. But the position I'm in at the moment with what I've seen so far, I'm not too confident. I love what they're doing. I love they're bringing, I guess technically bringing prices down or bringing focus over to the non-main brands. As we've seen with the power meters and other things, they've gotten it right out of China lately. So yeah, when it comes to power meter though, are you going super cheap?
Well, I've already got Asiomas, which they're still working. So I'll just put them over. If I had to, I probably would go one of the Spider based.
Yeah, the Machine P505 base or something like the Sugai with Spider. But then with the Spider meters, you're always looking at, well, I've got to run a certain crank set. I've got to run certain Spider chain rings and bottom bracket. Again, that's why the Asiomas and pedal based power systems are just so easy for everyone. Put on the bike with an 8mm hex wrench, done, or a 50.
100%. I did see. Someone sent me a photo of a pedal-based Majin power meter. I haven't seen anything kicking around online, but that would be cool if it's...
Okay, so what I've seen online so far is it looks to be... there are links between Majin and Wahoo. I believe Majin may produce some things for Wahoo.
Right.
Again, it's very fuzzy about who's doing what and who's manufacturing what, but the pedal-based power meter is Chinese market only. You can only activate them in China. I reached out to Majin and said, well, I can see you've got these. They're the P705 something they call. They're on Weight Weenies. Someone found them on Weight Weenies. And they turned around and said, look, Chinese market only, and you can't buy them because you can't activate them or they just simply won't work.
They've got a GPS in them that crosses over the ocean. Zaps the electronics.
Within the app, I think you have to activate it, whether that's got some kind of... there'd be ways probably to get around that with a VPN or something, but they look very much like the Wahoo PowerLink. The pod, everything aside from the pedal body look like the Wahoo PowerLink. And if they've got a product in the Chinese market... I'd say the next 12 to 18 months, they should have one for the rest of the market as well. I mean, they're doing power meters already. They're doing smart trainers. They're doing... look, Majin are the Wahoo of the East. Absolutely. They've got fingers in all pies. So if you do some digging, we'll put them in the show notes. Chris, I'll send you the link. We'll put them in the show notes and we can get people to have a look at those. But they still have the pods on them though. And I think the trend now is to move towards podless.
That was sort of my next question. Is that the sort of next trend for the pedal-based power system? Because I think we saw it on the new Asioma XPD pedals that they lost the pod. Do you think that's where we're going to head road-wise?
Well, we have seen that on the rallies, the Vectors from Garmin. Yep, they already have those. SRM are going that way. Look, have that as well. So everyone just cramming. Technology moves on, and it's good to see progression there, cramming all that tech inside the spindle. It's a good place to be, nice and protected. The pedal body becomes the protector of the... So even on the SPD pedals, I've been smashing those against some rocks. I've got a video coming out soon about... And I've captured a really, really great rock strike with a camera underneath my shoe, and the rocks just smash into the pedal. And thankfully, not the camera. And it just rides on. So putting everything inside the pedal is a great thing. And we're seeing more companies move towards that. Machine, as I said, the five to six year time frame with that window, if they were to release a road pedal with that pod, yeah, that's what we're seeing coming out of China or from the smaller brands, that phase shift. But it's up to the leading companies to continue that progression. What we've seen is...
Do you think there's downsides of a pedal-based power meter? Or are we just going to end up where everyone just has power meters in their pedals and crank power meters are just done?
Yes, there are downsides. There's two power meters. They're two independent power meters. So you've got to charge two batteries. There's two sets of strain gauge. There's two of everything, and they have to join together. So there's that. They are in a vulnerable position, kind of. But, I mean, that's what's always commented on forums. It's true. We're not seeing a lot of people smash pedals. Or if you've ever bent a pedal spindle, you're not worrying about your pedals. You're worrying about your own life and your bike that's in half and everything else. They're just convenient too. They really, really are. We're not seeing pro teams use them though, because again, there's a sponsorship thing there. So it's hard. It skews things. But I think what we're seeing, I went to the Grand Fondo Championships here in Ballarat, just having a look at the people in just doing the Grand Fondo of the Saturday night and looking at the power meters they were using, so many pedal-based power systems, because it solves the problem for the masses. Again, easy install, change my cleats if you need to, and away you go. So I don't think it'll make the Spider systems redundant. We see Quark doing really well, or SRAM doing really well, just acquiring Quark and throwing that on all their group sets.
Don't you think it makes a problem for selling new bikes? Because now every time you buy a new bike, most of them come with a power meter, that you've end up with this huge excess, essentially wastage of power meters, because every time you buy a bike, if you've got a pedal base that you're carrying over, you're paying an extra few hundred bucks for a power meter you don't need. Seems like a clean way forward.
Ideally, I mean, that's the end goal here, for group sets to come with power meters and job done. Absolutely. I mean, SRAM have moved that way already. SRAM now acquired PowerTap and the pedals, but they've done nothing with them because they've got the Quark Tech.
That's a waste.
Put that in the spindle, they put that in the Spire, they're selling the group sets. Problem done.
Because if you had another power meter pedal competing with Asiomas and the other ones that are coming out, they could then make their crank-based power meter done with, and then everyone just has their power meter, which is in the pedals, which they can have for maybe they have them for 5 years, in which case most of us, you know, cycling nut jobs are probably going to go through a few bikes.
Well, they are pretty light though. If they're being provided OEM on the bike, most of the times you'll then just sell the pedals or put them on a secondary bike. I don't see that as a problem. I'd love to see all group sets just come with a power meter, problem solved, and I'd love to see them just working. I don't think I've reviewed a Quark for a while because they just work. Problem solved. Power meters are a solved problem. We're just waiting for companies just to come around and match that. And I think it's a very good point that I think the pedals do fill a gap in the market, that my bike didn't come with a power meter, so I've bought some pedals, or it was too expensive to come with one, or it's inaccurate. I'm going elsewhere. We're even seeing companies spec non-Shimano power meters at the high end. Was it BMC, I think? A few others are specking four.
I don't think Canyon do anymore. I think Canyon spec it with a rotor.
I'd like to see bike companies offer the option of having a bike with, you know, I mean, they don't come with pedals anyway. Spec it with or without a power meter would be very handy. At the high end, I don't think we'll have any option though soon.
Do you think people care that they're accurate? I've touched on this a bit in the past, because obviously the Shimano thing, it's just a known thing at this stage that, you know, and every couple of months you revisit it with sort of more hilarious correspondence and results. And yet, Shane, they still sell like friggin' hotcakes.
Absolutely.
So,
yeah.
And I still have so many messages from people and things, oh, you know, I'm going to get a group set, blah, blah, blah. What do you recommend? Oh, Shimano's great. I'll just get the power meter.
Chris,
blah,
you
blah,
did blah. This like 2 years ago. And you knew better.
I know.
You think, oh, it looks cool. I'm just going to, cross my fingers that suddenly
it looks cool.
The front shifting with Shimano rings on a Shimano crank on a DI2 group set, that front shifting. There we go.
Absolutely.
It's said from God. It works. It's brilliant.
It's amazing.
Yeah. Anything else is a compromise.
And yeah, and so the I just find it then really interesting that like we don't and I'm part of it. There seems to be this massive sort of disconnect then between the accuracy of it. I assume just all the pros are they're not riding special Shimano power meters that none of us have access to. They're probably all just getting just as inaccurate readings as the rest of us.
Vanderpoel won Roubaix by 3 minutes solo with a power meter that probably didn't work too well because it doesn't matter at that level. But we're also not riding. I'd love to see the data as well. That'd be amazing, especially over the cobbles too. At a pro level, more Tour de France's have been won without a power meter than with. Having said that, Floyd back in, was it 2006, won his 17-minute breakaway with a power tap? Good on him, but I think something else helped him win that day. It was great from a sporting perspective. It was an amazing feat, but what we found out later on wasn't. He was using power tap back then. So, yeah, more Tour de France's have been won without power meters. Vanderpoel wins Paris-Roubaix by 3 minutes with a power meter that we know doesn't work that well. No, it doesn't matter at all. For training, right at that, you know, at a sports science level, it matters. But at the end of the day, when it's rider on rider, I was going to say man on man, but it's rider on rider, the women's cycling as well, they're all on power meters now, all on the high-end group set, which is great to see. No, it doesn't matter at all. In a time trial, maybe a little bit more than in a road race or a criterium. I mean, you try and race a crit based on your power, good luck. to even be able to see your head unit in that. So outside, it doesn't matter. Indoors, though, and for sports science, Jesse, you'll be all across this as a coach. If you're getting junk data...
I was going to say, I mean, in a race, it might not matter, but I still do not understand how Ineos's coaching staff, for example, can. What are you monitoring day to day with a rider? I mean,
probably good enough. Or I mean, for a while, Team Sky were on stages, and I think they were running. Were they running single sided, or they were running SRMs anyway? You'll see a lot of things in the background. A lot of riders are just so damn good; they just don't care. They'll just ride. And then the marketing, the contracts also get in the way of that too. The best thing about the technology we have these days is as amateur riders can have more choice and actually ride better equipment. Does it make a difference though? Well, our parents make the difference when it comes to how far we can go in cycling. But
I think in Ineos, for example, I could only assume a lot of their training bikes would be set up with some other power source because I saw on Ineos's YouTube channel, they did tire testing in the Continental Contidrome. A really cool video. They're testing their tires with an accelerometer on the chest to test the tire pressure and the tire widths. And you can see they've got Luke Plapp's bike here, and it's not a Shimano crank. So the testing they were doing in this video in particular, now they did a really good job at only showing the non-drive side, but you can see it's clearly not a Shimano crank. So even in a video...
Hiding the SRM logo.
I can't actually see what it is, but it's not a Shimano crank. So, I mean, for testing purposes, they'll use another power meter. So, I mean, it wouldn't surprise me if Geraint Thomas is out in Spain for a training camp and he's running something more accurate.
Yeah, it disappoints me that we're losing a lot of this at the high end, a lot of these high performance efforts. Vanderpoel's, you know, 2024 Roubaix win. We can't go back in the future and look at this data and say, hey, that's what it takes to win. That's what he used to win. They're the numbers right there. And I think it's irresponsible of Shimano to just keep rolling with that meter. And I mean, these riders put literally their lives on the line for training and racing. And there is millions of dollars involved in the sport somewhere. I'm not seeing it, but it's millions of dollars somewhere. To put them on shitty equipment, and then in the future, if we want to talk about AI data mining and where things are heading with training, we can't use that data because it's inaccurate. It's incorrect. It's overinflated. But look at the indoor side of things. How, when it comes to the esports and things like that, I mean, there's big opinions on esports. It is a discipline that's out there now. There are world champs being rewarded on whichever platform. But if you've got a power meter that changes its value by 6% on one side based on the chainring that you're using on the front, that can't be used indoors just because of the firmware that you've got. That's absurd. Anyhow, I think it's with the money and the reputation involved in this. Shimano will get it right one day. God, we're banging on about this, aren't we? I'll get it right one day, and it's problem solved. Yet, unfortunately, I'm still dangling in the wind. I'm the asshole in all of this.
Well, that's... Can we quickly talk about that?
You're a dangling asshole.
Me being an asshole.
Okay.
Yeah. There's the thumbnail for the video, Jesse.
I'll get to
just
it.
A dangling ass.
Yeah. Chat GPT, that one. Yeah, draw me a picture of a no.
I mean, it is kind of funny. It's like GP Llama versus Shimano, and it's not like, I don't know, it's not like a warfare or anything, but it's just you calling as it is. So it does interest me. Like, what is your relationship? Is there a relationship with Shimano in 2024?
I guess in general, and we'll back to the GCN video they recently put out about the problems with power meters, and I'm like, oh, here we go.
There you go.
They did a really good job of, again, bringing that conversation of, if people haven't seen the video, they're talking about the problems with power meters, the fact that power meters aren't accurate, one to the other. What do we do about that? It's good that they're bringing that into the conversation. They walked right up to the line, maybe stuck a little toe over the line. They didn't mention brands, though. And look, we respect that GCN are a different beast. They're a big business. They're owned by Big Corp. So they're not going to call things out like we can with our independence. But it was very interesting to see the gaps filled in the comments about that as well. So anything they didn't say, jump into the comments, gaps filled. And what's interesting is that through the testing of just, there's only a handful of us who've actually tested the new Shimano power meter. I've not seen any reviews other than what I've done because I'm genuinely interested in this technology and I want to use it for my own riding. I've got that new firmware. I've tested that new firmware. I think I've put 3 or 4 videos out about that goddamn new firmware. I'm seen as a frenemy by Shimano. Obviously, they know who I am. My door is still completely open to them. My relationship is non-existent. I emailed Shimano once about and query about a crank of something, and the disrespect that I got, they replied back with totally different text on a totally different topic. They thought I was banging on about the power meter again or something. And I'm like, no, I didn't ask that question at all. I wanted to know about this. And then more recently, I had to purchase their new meter to test their new firmware update. Typically, companies will send me something. I mean, I get too much stuff sent here. I don't need another power meter. But I had to go and buy their power meter to test it. Had a problem with it. And then I emailed Shimano saying, look, I've got a problem with the meter. Is it the responsibility of the retailer or yourselves? Do you want the data? Do you want a chance to replace this? What are we going to do here? How do I move this forward? All with the goal of just make a bloody good meter, and that's the review that I want to do. They refused to reply to email on me. So they can choose to make a shitty meter, but then when they choose bad customer service, that's just horrible. On the flip side, SRAM, a company who do exactly the same things. They make power meters, they make group sets, they make head units now as well. SRAM provide me way too much information. I've got to discard half of it for their press releases and their tech reports. Direct contact their PR managers, road managers. They'll happily send me whatever I request to test and use. And I review the same thing. It's really bizarre. My relationship with companies is 100% correlation between do they make a good product or not. If they don't, the relationship I have is quite icy. If they do, it's great.
I mean, what could Shimano do though, right? You kind of write and say, I've tested it. It's not coming back with the specs that you've put. What would you expect a good response to be other than, sorry, we'll work on it? I mean, no, not even? Okay.
They're not even giving that. Now, no. I think I've sent them one set of data 5 years ago and that's it. Their response is in their public updates. So the latest firmware update only affects the right-hand side of the crank, which I've been talking about for some time now, and it adjusts the values on the right-hand side of the crank, so rather than responding to me with, oh yeah, that's right, it's off because of this, no, they just publicly release a new firmware and claim that it's more accurate. They know, absolutely. And 99% of people working at Shimano also know, but they just can't do anything about it. Companies that respond well, though, to bad reviews, there are some out there. Four Eyes, for example, I ripped on their new P3 early on. It took them a while to get that working and right. They took the review and went, okay, sure, we'll try and fix that. A few weeks later, here's a new firmware. Can you go test? It was great. Bang. Second review comes out. Great. Sorted. In-peak power meters, we're doing some really funky things with oscillation of power with their accelerometers or gyroscopes going out. Gave them the feedback for that. They said, no worries. Here's a firmware. Try this, try that. A few weeks of back and forth, they nailed it. They also published a report on acknowledging who sent them the data, what they did to fix.
Do you put that first video up, the first review, or do you wait until, do you give them a response chance before you upload?
It does depend. Being the full owner and full independence of what I get to publish myself across all my platforms, I can choose whether to put something up or not. I go on gut feel for the Shimano stuff. They've had enough time, so I'll put out whatever I find on that. The Four Eyes one, there was a few back and forth for a few weeks. And then I know the reputation damage that can be done with a bad review. But again, at the end of the day, it's not me. It's not personal. Here's a commercial product that I've been sent. Here's how it performs. And the first question I always ask is, what have I screwed up? What have I done wrong? Or, you know, what am I? And that's the first question I ask of these companies as well. I mean, if they can't provide an answer of, oh, you've done this, this. But just open dialogue. That's all they need. I don't have that with Shimano. Other companies.
Ready to pop the question? The jewelers at BlueNile.com have got sparkle down to a science with beautiful lab-grown diamonds worthy of your most brilliant moments. Their lab-grown diamonds are independently graded and guaranteed identical to natural diamonds, and they're ready to ship to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Hey, it's Danny Pellegrino from Everything Iconic. Ready to upgrade your style game without blowing your budget? Check out Quince. They've got all the good stuff, shirts and polos, activewear and fine leather goods, all at 50 to 80% less than other high-end brands. And the best part? They're all about safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get that luxury vibe without the luxury price tag. Hit up quince.com/upgrade for free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. That's quince.com/upgrade.
Do you ever find yourself being used as essentially beta testing then?
Oh, hell yes. All the goddamn time. Yes, right. And that's something I need to protect my business against as well with time.
That's kind of where I was headed with that. I mean, essentially you're providing a service. You know, you could argue a service you could be charging for to provide very, very, very detailed testing of a product that's requires this before it goes to market.
Yeah, I've got to be careful not to. Yeah, look, if a company wants to come to me with a pre-release product that isn't released, that is a company that isn't known, they want expertise that will put them in a commercially beneficial position based on the feedback I'll give them, they'll get an invoice. Don't worry about that. Like, that's just business.
Good.
The pay for reviews, no, because that just doesn't work very well. And we can see out there on YouTube the reviews of certain products, and I can't bullshit my way through any review. Being a technical channel, again, as I said before, if I do something that says, oh, this works great and it doesn't, or if people get their Pro MX pedals from Asioma and they're junk, again, my reputation will be shit. So I go through with, well, what have I done? Am I confident in what I'm seeing? Here's the data. Back to the consulting side of things, a lot of it is not intentional from companies because a lot of my interaction will be with marketing, and they'll do this, the marketing or the PR firm will be like, oh, let's just send this to all these YouTubers. It's like, well, first and foremost, I'm a cyclist. I'm looking for products that I'll use and keep on my bike. So ideally what works really well is when a company says, hey, we've got a product I think that you will be interested in, Shane. I'm like, okay. As opposed to, hey, can we do a video on this for your channel? So they're interested in access to the audience. You guys have probably seen this as well. Chris, I'm sure you're getting emails all the time now. The show's doing really well. So the company's like, hey, what about this? Can you talk about this? You're like, well, give me the experience. So for me, if I have a great experience on the bike with a product, that's a story that I tell. And if you meet me in person, even the chat's here, it's easy to talk about what works, what doesn't.
Is that a part of your business, is doing sort of contract consulted testing? You that's part of your week.
If a company wants to come to me with access to, if they like, we've got a new power meter we're thinking of making, here's a prototype, we want it compared to, you know, Asioma's Power to Max on this bike. Hey, it's winter here in the northern hemisphere, it's summer down there, can you ride it in 40 degree heat? Cool. Absolutely, yeah, I'll do that, and I'll send them the invoice. If you have a look at, though, it's again, it's a big balance about what I do. Is it a company that I'll then review? Not typically, no. Again, it gets into the whole bias thing, and are you paid for reviews and things like that? And I guess the general audience doesn't want YouTubers to be paid. I think that's the general gist of things. But when it comes to something like, let's focus on the IGBS Sport, the 800. They're claiming a 50-hour battery life on this, and I've been using this for the last week or so. It's still got 77% battery. I think they're right on their 50 hours of battery. That is phenomenal. Okay, so this unit here, have a look at, and if people just want an insight into what I'm looking at when I first use a device or when I first put something on the bike and the feedback a company will get, either if it's behind the scenes, if it's a pre-release, this is what they get sent. Look at my Strava ride for the first ride of this one. I have 25 dot points about this unit and where it doesn't work too well. That's from the mapping to the sensor pairing to the speaker on this is behind the mount. So when you actually put this unit...
Have you seen those beeps?
Yeah, actually,
your Bluetooth device
am I right?
is connect.
With this unit, so here's some feedback. Like I've gotten this unit obviously too late in the development process. If you put this unit on your handlebars with a mount, where's the camera? On a mount like that, lock it in, and that mount is enclosed. Oops. You can't hear the beeps. Now that's... So you've got to... I'm like, why can't I hear my Varia? Why can't I hear the... Why? Oh, shit, that's... Where's this? Oh, the speaker is muffled. Little things like that. Early access to products is what I need, and to have a good experience on the bike. But have a look at my latest, one of my latest Strava rides. I've put in the comments. Oh, here's some notes, though, just some basic notes, and it is a massive slab. The response from the company on that is from IGP Sport. They're like, we'd like you to have a great relationship with our distributor in Australia. So here's their details. I'm like, how is a distributor going to work on all of these
your product
issues?
Development.
Yeah, exactly. So, yeah. And there's a lot of good reviews out there about this already.
We talked it up a couple of weeks. Chris was giving it...
I was giving it the big sell for a week, and then I walked it all back.
I've used it? What do you want to know about it?
Well, no, I'm a bit like yourself in the sense that there's all the functionalities there. Like, it exists. There's a Climb Pro. Well...
Yeah, and you've fallen straight to the trap, and I love this. I love that you've fallen straight into it. Like, this is the... Gotcha.
I was going to do a but. There was a but coming.
Like, I got in first.
But it's like you said in the video, there's this kind of... What was the phrase you used?
It's half the price, but you do twice as much work to get to the same functionality.
It's like this little battle that you then face once you step away from the device.
Yeah.
It's like, well, hang on, I want to put my Strava route on there. Right, well, let me think about how I'm going to do this, okay?
You're exporting GPX files now. Yeah, you're not... Whereas, look.
Even little things. So, like, I wanted to ride this at Grafton, right? And I was like, okay, cool. I'll put the course points on here of, like, the feed zones, KOMs, blah, 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 blah. And I'm like, brilliant. Can't do that. So you could export. I mean, I could manually try and edit a GPX file and then sort of upload that somehow, but I'm not actually sure that it's going to recognize the course points. And then I'm concerned that it'll do that classic thing, because it doesn't have the rerouting ability, that if at some point it loses the course, it'll then suddenly go, right, we'll send you back to Grafton, because that's where your first course point is. Yeah, U-turn.
The scenario there is, okay, let's just say Jesse rocks up next to you, same ride, with a high-end unit, let's call it the 1040 Solar, has created the route, and then just... on Komoot, Strava, wherever, starred the route, cool, that's the one I want to ride. Jesse's turned on his unit and it appears on the home screen. Jesse clicks the home screen and done. He's standing there waiting. And Chris, you're sitting there going, GPX, export, what the bloody, hang on, it's won't route, won't load, reroute. That's the hidden cost of these cheaper units. They'll get it right soon, but what you've been sold, though, is something that has 10x10 navigation and routing. That's it. That's all they'll sell you. Or they sell you, it's got Climb Pro. Now, Climb Pro on this unit here, iClimb Pro. Now, it's been three or four years since I think Garmin have released Climb Pro. So Climb Pro, if people aren't aware of that, as you're riding a course with a predefined route with hills, it'll break down each hill into segments, present them to you as you ride, so you know what's coming up. You know where the crest of the hill is. Bloody fantastic on the back of Falls Creek, or you know, it's like, okay, I've got 10K to go. I'm going to back this off. Oh, shit, 2K to go. Let's hit it. You have some intelligence on your handlebars. It is brilliant technology. It's a few steps above what everyone else usually wants, which is heart rate, speed, power, cadence, upload to Strava at the end, but it's super cool functionality. They've even enhanced that recently across the board as well on Wahoos and Hammerheads. It will happen automatically. I'll be riding along a Skipton rail trail. The head unit doesn't even know if I'm going to turn left or right up ahead, but it's going to take a guess that, hey, there's a hill 2Ks ahead of you. Here's what's coming up. Prepare. And I'll be prompted with that. Absolutely brilliant tech. Some of the units that I've got, don't even know I'm riding on the rail trail because bike maps aren't even on the bike computer. I'm like, why am I riding in the middle of a paddock? Why am I? And then I've got a second unit next to it, which is only $150 more. It is telling me not only am I riding on the Skipton rail trail, that in 2 kilometers, there's a climb coming up. Here's how I should pace that. Or here's the graphs of that. Oh, by the way, you know, here's your song playing and here's someone's at your front door delivering an Amazon package. You're getting all the details. There is such a wide gap between what the cheaper units offer and what the more expensive units offer.
Oh, okay.
Now, down to the... Sorry to go on about this all day. I'm sorry for the listeners listening through my crap. If you ever meet me in person, always just buy me a coffee and I'll talk twice as fast. Now, Climb Pro, you're like, oh, it's got Climb Pro, great. And people then assume it's going to be the same as Garmin. I loaded the same route on a Garmin versus the IGS 800 the other day on a route. The Garmin has three climbs detected. Cool. Go out and do the ride. This device detected one climb, but only the top of that climb. So here I am hitting 10% gradients on short climbs, and this thing doesn't even tell me I'm climbing. It doesn't even have an upcoming elevation, or it doesn't have... there's just all these little hidden costs. So even when you're doing twice the work to get to the same functionality of the device that you didn't pay for, you're still not getting to that same end point. And if you're riding along in a race, let's just say Three Peaks, you've loaded the course, you're back of falls, again, I'll refer to that, there's absolute hell. And your head unit's saying, 200 Ks, whatever. But the person next to you is going, okay, this route's coming up, here's your pacing, here's what you're doing, you're looking at someone else's head unit. What have you spent $200 on yours for? And doesn't provide the same functionality.
Is that so? Just specific on that Crime Pro stuff. Like, so is the iGPS pulling that metadata from somewhere else, or is it just interpreting the same data incorrectly?
That's a good point that I didn't mention. The Climb Pro on the iGPS Sport is only for predefined routes. It won't do it in free ride. Okay. So it pulls it from the GPX or whatever you've synced to it. And even then it applies an algorithm to, okay, I see this hill, I categorize this hill. On the higher end units, you can categorize hills with the four or five different levels of grade and distance and length. So if you're out on a mountain bike, you can just have it not pop up all the time. No configuration options on the lower end unit. So the hidden costs are, it's... what I see in the other reviews as well, I guess, to talk about the reviews I've seen, there's a lot of reviews of the lower end units coming from reviewers who haven't had that experience of using the higher end units across all functionality. These things will do heart rate, speed, power, GPS well enough, upload to Strava, and that's what 99% of people want. But that day that you sign up for the Peaks Challenge and you put your money in for that and you're like, oh, I can't do a training plan on this.
Yeah, I've never used Climb Pro because I'm still on an older Wahoo. So it sounds like it'd probably be good enough for me, but then it's, well, why have they put it in? Do you think they'd be better just not putting those features in and maybe selling less?
Oh, it's a marketing line. We've got Climb Pro. Yes, tick box, done. So when you do a comparison table of here's what the high-end units do, here's what we do, same, isn't it? Yeah, cool. And then we're half the price. Mm. Fantastic. But it's not until you really use that product for exactly what it's designed for.
I mean, Jesse, I wouldn't consider this product unless it had a Climb Pro. I mean, I was testing this product from Keish gave me this to test, and it was I just said, I'm not going to even bother taking this from you unless it's got some sort of climb feature for me on there. I'm completely, well, not my day-to-day, but it just has to be there for any event type thing for me.
I call Climb Pro, I call it Grand Fondo Pro. So Grand Fondo, 100%. Typically you're going to a place where you haven't ridden before. You may know a general outlay of the profile, but you've no idea that when you climb up to this, the visuals, if on your home roads, you know exactly where the climbs go. But if you're somewhere where you don't know the climbs go, let's say you go to Adelaide for the TDU. Let's go climb Corkscrew. Yeah. Oh, yeah, I know it's hard, but where does it get hard? Bang, right there on your screen. Don't go too hard when you go over the bridge. Just wait to those corners because you can see it, and it will be colored black on the screen.
Little you're just staring like and waiting for the green gradient to come. Yeah.
And what I love about this technology is it enhances your riding on the bike. We can't ever forget that with all this tech and all these sensors and 15 CR2032s, carted along for every ride that we do, it's still about riding a bike and what technology can enhance that experience of riding a bike, but not overly complicated. It might sound, if you're not across Climb Pro, you might sound that, oh, shit, that sounds way too much. No, when you break that information down into simple terms such as, oh, there's a climb in 2Ks, that's all I need to know. Or the climb is 3Ks long, excellent, that's all I need to know. And I do think we do get caught up, I'm guilty of this, getting caught up in so much technology that you forget about riding your bike. And then looping back to what technology works and what comes out of China, what's going to be successful, something that solves a problem, but does it simply. It needs to be not overly complex.
So I suppose that's almost back to Jesse's original point then. So are we just going to be left with a monopoly or duopoly in this space as well, if both you and I are sitting here saying, well, they're not there yet?
There's always a market for a cheaper device that doesn't do all the things with these bells and whistles. Absolutely. There's a market for that because, again, people just want heart rate, speed, power, upload to Strava, we're done. That's all they care about. So there's always going to be a market for that. There's always opportunity for a new player to come in and do it better, cheaper, faster. Oh, this thing's beeping at me. Hammerhead is a good example. 10 years ago, if I had said the word Hammerhead, you'd be like, who? They come along, made the Karoo One. Massive. Have I got in arm's reach. Have a look at that. It's massive.
It's
going to
have a fight with the Stages Dash. This 1v1, the heavyweight title.
Yeah, this is I've got sore arms. I have to put it down. Okay. That's my weightlifting done for the day. That came out, changed the game. So there is opportunity for companies to come along. So even though that Garmin and Wahoo have a massive head start, they do really well. There's a lot of people who have been burnt by both companies. Like, oh, I've done this and I hate... A lot of the time they've been burnt by the 510 really sucked. So all the new products also suck. Or, you know, the Bolt version 1 didn't have detailed mapping. So, they're all shit. When you're at the cutting edge of what they're doing, they're all pretty much one for one. They're doing pretty well.
Yeah.
So there is an opportunity for companies to come along and do well. But again... We need authenticity in the marketing, not have...
Well, isn't that what happened with the Hammerhead? I mean, what we talked about earlier on in terms of just release a good product that does everything it says and it'll do well. The Hammerhead Karoo, I mean, Chris, you had one.
That was a beta product. That was like a consistent beta product for so long.
It is a different product than what you had on release. It really is. The software updates they've done, it's an Android device. So that it's effectively, what they've done is updated the apps on it. There's a few hardware limitations of that. The touch screen, the barometer's pretty crap on the two.
Do you not find screen, that matte screen, becomes almost invisible in like...
Absolutely. Yep.
Yeah, okay.
When the sun is directly straight above you, and I've put this in one of my videos, you can't see the screen. You can't see the screen. Something that they will likely address in any update if they were to... Let's not speculate.
But they've already...
They may do an update one day.
I don't know.
On a new unit. They'll fix that screen. Actually, the FCC thing's already out there, hasn't it? It's leaked.
Yes.
They may do something with the screen, absolutely.
We're getting one. Yeah.
That is on a software side of things, and it's up to, and here's a challenge. Sorry to sideway this one again. The challenge of a hardware company is to continue to provide updates and features for a unit that's not a subscription service. You buy your head unit once. So a Garmin, you're paying a premium for the Garmin, but you're getting that ecosystem. You're getting updates for 2 or 3 years and some significant updates and support, local support too. There's a Garmin help desk in Australia to call. Do you think Brighton have a help desk in Australia to call? They may be on email pretty quick, but it's that update. Like if this fails, who do I send it to? Is it Australia? Is it, you know, back to the HQ? I'm not sure. So there's a hidden cost there and a benefit that, again, only when you need it, it's handy. But providing cloud services, upload services, and support for the life of a very, very cheap product is difficult for a company to do.
We talk about computers for so long. It's just like, I do feel like eventually.
Well, yeah. They're almost like a religion because people will love their head unit or they believe the head unit they have does the best and does the best for them. And a lot of the times they will.
Do head unit videos do well on your channel? Does the audience actually care? Or is it just you two?
Yeah, that was...
I don't really... I probably wouldn't click on one of your head unit videos, but I click on the power meter one.
Yeah. I can read a change log. Garmin head units, like just a bland change log and add context to, you know, what is Nav IC?
I've watched all of them, mate. Yeah.
There we go. Because, I mean, it's people talk, you know, the word Garmin Edge will get clicks. People are searching for that. Use Google Trends. You'll see people are searching for Garmin Edge over Hammerhead or anything else. So they do really, really well. When something's new out, my computers are an interesting one because people want to know what's out there, even if they're not going to buy it, but only for the popular brands. So I do a video on a firmware update for the Hammerhead. No one's watching. If you've got a Hammerhead, you'll watch it, but view-wise, it does terrible.
Yep.
It's got to be innovative and very, very interesting. If I did a review on the Brighton Rider 15, no, like cost-effectiveness, no. I'd just not even break even on one of those. So they do quite well for the big brands, or if something is really new and really interesting. Let's just say if the Karoo 3 was to come out this year sometime, that's been so leaked that I don't think the review videos
will be
very well.
I haven't seen much about it. Maybe I'm not in the right forums.
Is the wearable space, do you think that's got any potential of moving into this scene? So, yeah, I'm talking about the sort of the Apple Watch, the Garmin Watch type thing. Is that going to
head? These are shit by computers.
Okay.
These are shit by computers. They really are. Triathlon scene, yes. Multisport, yes. The functionality they provide is almost equivalent. They're pretty cool. I'm surprised watches are still even a thing. For runners, I get it, but for cyclists, I don't think we wear watches. One thing, and I really frustrated me, I was going to do a review on this because this does connect to a power meter now. This is the Ultra One. But when I'm riding my bike and I'm on gravel or mountain bike, this thing's going like this on my wrist. Maybe it's my old man skin. smashing up against that little bone in my wrist and making me angry.
Mm.
Like, why is this technology? Why is this done? Where the hell is the review that says that it does this? I know it's a personal thing, but it's like, holy shit, no one covers this. Everyone's like, oh, great, look, it connects to power meters and puts out a non-critical review and doesn't move the needle. I'm like, holy shit, I wouldn't have even put this on. How have I known it's going to smash into my wrist? But yeah, in the wearable space, it just blows me away how many watches Garmin release.
Yeah.
Like, it was 4 days into 2024 and they released a new watch. You walk into a store to buy a watch? Holy shit. I through Dubai Airport a couple of weeks back. You walk up to the electronics and there's just a wall. I'm like, I kind of know what most of these do. Which one's for me? Oh, look, you walk over to the Apple stand though, and there's what, two or three to choose from.
Yeah,
so much better, so much better. But and it's a contrast, especially with the Garmins. They have pretty much three head units plus the smaller ones to choose from. Do you want touchscreen? Do you want just buttons? Do you want big touchscreen and some buttons? Here's your options. Makes it so much easier. Wahoo do the same thing. There's what, two units from Wahoo. But on the watch and wearable side of things, so confusing for pure cyclists anyway. But for triathletes, I think they're still a thing.
Is that just because like the cycling space in Garmin is quite a small market part of their business?
I think so. Yeah. I think, and also because it's not a subscription service yet,
yeah.
It wouldn't surprise me if they moved to a subscription service. They've got to keep selling watches. They've got to keep selling things. They've got to keep selling devices. I think on the small side of things, they can probably wear some of that cost by not releasing so many bike computers, and thank God they don't, because it'll just flood the market, add more confusion. Now it's pretty easy to choose. But I wouldn't surprise me if they move to a subscription model or a company comes out with a head unit that does have some kind of subscription attached to it. Cheap hardware, but that service needs to be great. It needs to offer everything in the cloud and at the end of the day, provide a good experience on the bike or enhance what you've already got. If something doesn't enhance your experience on the bike, why bother? Like disc brakes, fantastic. Did I touch a nerve? Hopefully I didn't touch a nerve.
Not with me, with him.
Yeah. So they provide a better experience. Great. If they, you know, tubeless tires, provide a better experience in some circumstances. So things need to move forward. And if all companies are doing offering, if they're just making themselves another kicker, it's not going to do that well. Like when Wahoo came out with the kicker, everyone scrambled to make a kicker and just became a same.
Coming back to your reviews for a moment. Are there products, are there companies or something that you've chosen not to publish the review for particular reasons or you wouldn't choose to?
Yeah, absolutely. There's quite a few things sitting on the shelf. I get sent quite a lot of things and a lot of emails get unanswered. A lot of it's based on time and one of those are aero sensors. Four or 5 years ago, we had companies, there's 8 or 9 companies working on aero sensors and just now we're seeing them come into a commercial product that I think works. Well, they say it works and they want to send them to me, but aero testing takes so much time. And the variables you have to control, I know they're trying to remove all of that and remove all the friction. That's exactly what they're all about. But I refuse to do any aero sensors for now. I'm also no longer time trialing, which means I don't really care how fast I'm going. As long as I can put out enough power to test a power meter, I'm happy, or ride long enough to get to the coffee shop, I'm good. We'll complete the Llama lab test indoors. Aero sensors I've steered clear of, but it product-wise, there is a power meter that I have some data on, but I've chosen to shelve for now simply because of, well, it's taking up too much time, but I've also noticed a few things that I'm not happy with. The response I got from the company was interesting, but I really need to, what's the word? I need to beef up, protect, armor myself if I was to put a review out there, because the way the company communicates publicly is very, very aggressively. I'm talking about InfoCrank. I think they're an Australian-based company out of Perth.
I think WA, yeah.
Right, yep. So they work with, I think, the AIS when the AIS wanted to get rid of SRMs and things like that. Their marketing, their communication wasn't just a, hey, we do things best. Their communication is effectively summarized, everything else is shit. We're the only ones who truly measure power. Get fucked. That's pretty much what I read. I'm like, way. So if I was to, if you've got an InfoCrank, look into Cadence Decay. I come across the thing called Cadence Decay on the InfoCrank and I'm like, what the batshit is Cadence? What's going on? I've found some, anyway, I'm well down the rabbit hole with that. The explanation I got, it wasn't reading the same, I won't say accurately, I wasn't reading the same as my other trusted meters. And it was just a little like, oh, and if I was to publish a review on that, I can guarantee this is going to result in a phone call or a nasty email. But at the end of the day, it's not me. This is just my observations. And I'm concerned if I was to put some observations out there, it'll end in legal issues. And I don't want to go to a lawyer just to publish a review. Bugger that. I've had enough issues in the past. Oh, mate. You guys have got chevrons on your shirts too. How are you getting away with that? I've got no idea. So that's one thing I've chosen not to. I mean, I've still got the units here. I can still loop back to them. They are making a new unit. But my spidey senses on that product and the company and how they operate are being set off. And after doing this for many years...
So what are you saying? That you're saying that they would say what you're saying if you did a review and said... Compared to how I test this in the lab, this isn't in line with the other sensors I have. That's defamatory. Is it? You're kind of getting it.
I wouldn't not expect. That's what I expect from them. Either trying to discredit what I do. I've actually had someone from the Taipei Cycle Show like rip me down entirely. I agreed to most of his points. He's like, "Oh, your English is really shit. Your vocabulary is very basic." I'm like, "Yeah, I'm a fucking..." Like what? Like I'm not an engineer here. I'm a cyclist first and foremost, and my background's IT. I'm a cyclist first rather than a journalist or anything like that. So this guy ripped me apart, and I'm like, I don't want to deal with the battle. I just simply want to get a product, ride it, and if it works for me and changes my experience on the bike, I want to communicate that. If it doesn't change my experience on the bike, or I need to review it again, I go to YouTube. I'd rather not be a YouTuber at all. I'd rather just go and ride bikes, wouldn't we all? But that's how I get noticed, and that's how it does pay the bills. So, yeah, for that one, I might reopen the dialogue with them on their new unit, but it is very, just what I see just doesn't sit well with me at all. And if you know, you know. If you've seen their marketing, their communications, it's just very different. Remember when Duracell came out saying that Energizer sucked or Energizer? You're looking at it going, yeah, you might, but do you really need to name a Coke and Pepsi, all those sort of things? Do you really need to name your competition? Just make a product, make it well, fill a gap, done. So again, I don't feel confident enough to put out anything on that. But I'm happy to answer questions on forums and talk about it right here. But putting out anything official like that. I mean, it comes down, the simple message is, if any takeaway from today's show is that companies just make a product that works, just as simple as that, and believe in the product. You can see, as soon as they try to hide behind marketing or bullshit or people's experience doesn't equal what they're selling, it becomes a problem. But it is also hard to navigate through reviews of those things as well now. You've got to look at the reviewer, not to piss in my own pocket too much, but you have to have a reputation. You've got to have an established trend, I guess. I mean, if someone was to come out with a review of a new power meter that you've never seen before, that's great. That's your take. Where are you coming from with that? What's behind what you're saying? Same with a few of these head units. People are saying, oh, this is fantastic. I'm riding around. This is the only head unit they've got on the front of their bike. Great. That's fine. But if they haven't had an experience across the board, what's the authenticity of what they're saying? But most companies don't care about that. They just want glossy things they can cut up for Instagram or Reels and throw up.
I don't want to fanboy too much here, Shane, but like you have been a big part of my the last 10, I don't know, how long have you actually been on YouTube, out of interest?
Ooh, when did Maven tell me to go get a camera? It was the legendary cycling Maven who said, get a camera. He was doing some great stuff early on, just that lifestyle, general, likable bloke, doing some funny stuff here and there. And I thought I could kind of do this at a tech angle. And he took me down to Camera House in Chadston. Here's the camera you need. And away we went. That was 2016. That was YouTube. I thought I was too late to the game for YouTube with subscribers and views and trying to establish what I did. But I had a blog for years and years prior to that, prior to Google Maps coming along. I think the GP Llama Blogspot. I was time trialing a lot. I was racing a lot. And I think I started the blog because we had a time trial out in a town called, there's a town hall there, nothing else, called Ballyang. No one knew where Ballyang was. And before Google Maps came along, we were driving out there, Northern Combine, just out of Melbourne, and cars were going left, right, back, and everyone's going, turn around, Ballyang's the other one. No one could figure out where the bloody hell Ballyang was. So I put up on my website, here's the directions to Ballyang, right, okay, time trial starts here, here are the grades, and everyone sort of went, oh that's a good resource. So I think it took off from there.
That's how I found you. So right, okay, I remember I was doing must have been a master's time trial, and it would have been in gunning in New South Wales.
Yep.
And I was searching everywhere because it was Orion, like Strava was sort of a thing, blah, blah, blah. But I had no idea about this course or anything. And I just fell on, was it called GP Llama at the time?
Yeah. That was all just
and
GP Llama blogs.
It was your review, quote unquote, of the New South Wales time trial state masters course. And I was like, oh, great, fantastic.
Yep.
Then there I was sort of following along from that point of view. So obviously you're riding at that point. You were sort of heavily into time trials. That was sort of filmed the basis of your riding.
Yeah, for sure. My background is IT security. I was in the tech space for years and years and years. For those playing the long game, MCSE, CNA, Linux Plus, all these certifications. I used to chase certifications as well after uni. And yeah, cycling got in the way and become, as you guys know, it becomes an obsession. Started eating well, training, and losing some weight. By the time I got fast, I was about 29. I started at about 25, about 29 to 30. And then the masters scene came along. And as you've spotted there, I did a lot of masters riding. I think in 1 year I did something like 70 to 80 time trials because I could race elites.
Yep.
I could race a club, elite, masters, veterans, and any other championship. So I could race multiple licenses. So anytime someone had a bike event that a clock started and a clock stopped, when you crossed the line, I was there, traveled everywhere. And coming from a tech background, again, I had a power meter back in wherever. We're in time trial mode. So all the technology just focused. And I guess this is sort of fills in the puzzle pieces about where I'm at and where I'm sitting today. Using power meters, using GPS units, breaking the courses down, and not doing best bike split. I don't think that was around at the time, but going to the wind tunnel with Raul Lucia. Also, Champ Sis had a time trial suit with, is it Elsha Eschler Fabric at the time? This is well before anyone else is doing their homework. So we had faster skin suits. Before time trial helmets were registered in Australia for open road use, we were riding skateboard helmets, ProTec. So we were doing helmet testing because it took a while for the Australian standards to actually release a time trial helmet we could use. So we were using skateboard helmets and just doing all the tricks before everyone else got fast. So like real estate, I got in early before the real quick guys came along.
I think you're doing yourself a slight disservice there. So what was your bike at the time? So peak Shane, what was the setup? Do you remember?
I actually should pull the photo down. I've got it up above me there. I can explain it. It's a Shiv, specialized S-Works Shiv, head 90 Stinger front wheel. I had about four or five front wheels to choose based on the wind on the day. So we were studying wind trends, surfaces and things like that. So I had a Stinger 90, I think was my front wheel, but I also had a tri-spoke, a 404 for windy days. Always running a Zip 900 on the back, mechanical Durace, because at the time, and we were right into the regulations, you could get a little further extended with mechanical levers based on where they measured your reach. I had to keep a copy of the UCI regs in my glove box in the car because the amount of commissaires I had trouble with. They're like, oh, bring that seat back, or you can't even run a drink bottle. I'm like, no, that's the track, or it's less than 500 mil. The time they banned booty covers on the track, I had a time trial up in Wangaratta, and the CA commissaire said, you can't wear booty covers in a time trial. I'm like, it's 2 fucking degrees outside. I'll get the UN involved with this. Like, it's cold. We're going to put booty covers because they misinterpreted the rules. Now, unfortunately, a lot of commissaries are volunteers, and I respect that now. But back in the day, we get pretty heated. Anyway, so it was a Shiv with zip wheels, a time.
So that was the Super 9, the disc.
No, just the 900.
Okay,
just the old school 900. Yep. They were tubulars. 23 mil or 22 mil. I don't know how the hell we ratted our teeth through those. But also the bike position was everything. And I wasn't a power monster. I think my FTP was 360 at the time, racing at about 69, 70 kilos. I was racing up against Tom Leeper. Tom's putting out 420 watts for the same time trials. I was putting out 350, 360, and I was still putting a minute into him. But it's the technology. It's the position on the bike. It's the everything. These are commonly known now. 10 years ago, a little bit ahead of the curve. So I got in early, and then people got really frigging quick. And that was in the time trial side of things. On the road, I've got a soft spot for my SL4. Oh, that was such a nice bike. Such just big, chunky carbon tubes. I had SRAM mechanical 10-speed on it. Raced a lot on the SL4. Raced that into the ground. That frame was just shot at the end of it.
So were you pre-mantising before it was cool to pray Mantis? Because
no, we couldn't. There was the 10-centimeter rule for but going up. I'm just looking at my – I had just slight kicks, but it was about, you know, getting your nose and closing that front angle rather than scooping into the wind. Like, if you look at Cadell Evans' old time trial position, I've got no idea how the hell that worked.
That was pure castration, that thing.
If he rode backwards, I think he'd be faster, but power wins, technology there, I don't know. Sometimes you've got to test things in the tunnel to know exactly what works. But no, we were in the tunnel. We were down. I spent near on $1,000 in the tunnel to be told, keep your head down. Also, things like helmets, helmet types. I bought every single time trial helmet that was out there when they did come along. Unfortunately, my $90 Lemar Speed Demon, I'm just looking up here, always tested the fastest with my back angle. So helmets are very, very individual. And what's the quickest? A lot of people were getting the stubby-tailed cask. Remember that? Probably back in the day, just as I was finishing up.
Bambino, was it?
That's it. Yeah. Everyone was racing one of those and putting the tail up in there. I'm like, oh, yeah, you wear those. That's fine. There's 20 seconds straight out. Yeah, had heaps of fun. And that's I guess, where I got into the tech side of things. So then I had a kicker early on that was reading 20 watts low. That's a problem. My first power tap wasn't working if it got any colder than 16 degrees. Yeah, just the troubleshooting of that and my tech background, that's sort of where it leads me. You know, fast forward 10 years, 15 years later, here I am. Yeah, had heaps of fun on the bike anyway. But I think 2016, I wrapped up. We're training for Tour of Bright again. Tour of Bright was, I mean, that's just a brilliant race. At a club level, that thing used to sell out within 45 minutes. Not so much these days. Targeted the Masters of that, and I was always sort of top 10. I was lucky enough to get a win in the Masters 1, 2, 3 one year. Then they switched to Masters ABC and then took the win in that one, and then training the next year for it. And when you know what it takes to train at the top end, Jesse, you'll know this. Like, training, one thing a lot of people don't talk about is how bloody hard it is, and the commitment is huge. And kudos to anyone who's still out there racing at my age or not at any age. It takes a lot. My best quote that I've ever read about cycling is, you've got to train so hard just to be shit. And here I was training so hard just to be shit. Again, I'm like, oh God, I've got to lose another 5 kilos. I'm doing 380 for 10 minutes up this climb. My wife's back at the cafe. Guys.
It's gotten worse now, I'd say. The level's higher.
Oh, mate, look at someone like what Marco's doing, and that's all kudos to him. He's putting out massive numbers, has a family too, like, just phenomenal. But the commitment that requires, look at his Strava stuff. It is just phenomenal. But, I mean, for where I'm at though, that stopped probably 7, 8 years ago. I'll dabble here and there and take a comm when it's a tailwind. That's about it though. But it's all about having fun on the bike. My wife asked me the other day, like, do you still enjoy cycling? I had to think about that because a lot of the tech I get's frustrating, and a lot of the shit that I deal with, like being sued for €250,000 for a t-shirt. Like, what the? Anyhow, and then things like the, you know, getting ripped from left, right, and center. You know what it's like being out and putting out things in public. And I'm like, look, cycling in general, I guess if it was a sunny day, I had nothing to do, the first thing I'd want to do was go for a ride. That's it. And Von's like, yep, done. You still like it. I'm like, okay, cool. That's my tester. If I had spare time, what do I want to do? Go for a ride. We're done.
You're riding a lot of gravel now. What's your road to gravel to mountain bike mix now?
Oh, good question. I was pure roadie back in the day. And then pure time trialist. If there's a time trial coming up, that's the only bike I would ride. I'd jump on a road bike. It would feel weird. But since not focusing on any events, it was mostly road, and then gravel came along with so many similarities. Guys, you'd notice yourself, you know, jumping on a gravel bike. You're like, it's drop bars. The geometry is about the same. It feels, I've got confidence to ride this just like a road bike. Might need to slow down a little bit in the corners and learn a little bit about positioning and some skills there. But the rest of it's the same. So I absolutely love gravel, and the accessibility to gravel for here in Ballarat. We've got hundreds and hundreds of Ks of roads around to ride options. Right. My ratio, and again, if I was to choose, if I had 3 bikes lined up, gravel bike every time.
But has gravel pulled you in? Do you follow pro gravel? Has that shifted what you follow?
Not really. It's because the coverage is so sporadic. Like, you can't go and watch the end of a gravel race, last 10Ks of a gravel race. So I'll still watch pro cycling for the last 10Ks and things like that. I kind of know the names and things of people at the front end. A few of the Aussies over there racing what's the gravel scene in the
Lifetime Grand Prix. Yeah.
And Peter Mullins is heading over there and racing. That's great to see. So I follow those along as individuals. And I do like that about the gravel scene. It's the individuals you're following. You're not following the teams or, you know, the team's PR. It's what are the individuals up to? Dylan Johnson and his journey through, you know, training and coaching and things like that, the technology he uses. Interesting story to follow along with. But gravel is just, Yeah, mountain bike, I'm dabbling a little bit. With the Pro MXs coming, I knew they were coming along, so I did get myself a mountain bike. That's a bit of fun. And I do take the gravel bike to where gravel bikes shouldn't be, so that's where the mountain bike comes out. I wouldn't be doing any mountain bike races anytime soon. But again, Ballarat, we have a mountain bike park in town, right, like 3Ks to my left. The whole there's downhill, there's cross country, there's a pump track, there's everything mountain bike. And I've got a son now, he's 4.5. So very soon, yeah, he'll be out on the bike. And I'm thinking, like, let's not put him on a road bike. Let's put him on a mountain bike and we can go out and have some fun.
Can we have a go at the guess the brand?
Okay.
I've seen you guys play this game. I'm going to be no good at this at all.
Do we have a genre?
No good.
But I went through a good catalogue of Shane's, let's say, last 60 videos. And I tried to pick out a couple of products that he had reviewed or at least mentioned in some way on the channel and then gone to their marketing buzz. All right. So I'm going to start you off. You can have a go at this as well, Jesse, but it's sport is our life and it makes life better.
Now,
I will give you a clue. It's a product we have talked about today.
Oh, well, let's not make it. Let's not make it too easy.
Specifically, a bit of bike.
Oh no, I've got no idea. I don't read marketing spiels much at all. I read the tech specs. I ignore all
that's,
of them.
Oh, that's what I should have done. I should have given like
yeah. Give me the tech specs. Give me your tech specs. Of tri- yeah.
level of accuracy, plus or minus. Yeah.
Funny you should say that. There was an article published about, you know, smart trainers aren't accurate. Here are the smart trainers. We've anonymized them. Here are the specs of the trainers. I'm like, 1, 2, 3, done. That's a Flux 2. Yeah. That's a Suto. And that's a something else. Yeah, that's a Hammer 3.
Sport is in our life and makes life better.
My God. So here's the difference between marketing, PR and spiel and spin versus, you know, what the experience is. Maybe that product didn't make my life better, so I haven't remembered
it. Based on our conversation, that's correct. It didn't make your life better.
That's a Shimano then. That's got to be Shimano.
No, unfortunately. It is the iGPS Sport motto.
I've got one for you. You could have used Froome's quote about that. Is he's bringing love and joy to cycling or love and joy to sport. There was a love and joy quote from Froome about the head.
Train Smart. Another product we discussed Asiomas, today. Isn't it? That is Asiomas, correct.
Oh, well done. Jesse, I wouldn't have got that. I would have gone Trainer Road on that one. Something like that. Being smart AI.
Ride the revolution.
Revolution. That's confidence. They're confident they have a revolutionary product.
Big brand.
Big brand. Have we spoken about it today?
We certainly discussed the brand. I'm not sure whether we've discussed this.
Wahoo Kicker?
Yes, Jesse Coyle.
Oh, Jesus. Golly.
My God.
I'm just a sucker.
All right.
He's reading marketing spiel. Jesse,
I reckon you'll get this. Yeah. I reckon you'll get this. The original power meter.
SRM.
SRM.
Gotta be. Gotta be. Okay, good. Thank you. That's throw me a bone there. Thank you.
I think this is a good one. Actually, ride with confidence. Again, we have discussed this product today.
With confidence. That's a big call from the company would want to back this up.
I feel like this is based because their previous iterations of this product didn't leave you with confidence. I actually rode a previous iteration version of this product, and yes, it had challenges.
Ooh.
But this current
bike
version.
Component?
It is a component power meter.
FSA?
Close, no. It's the Garmin Vector 3s.
Ooh.
Ride with confidence. Ooh. I had the original Garmin Vectors, which you have to calibrate every 20 minutes. Any time the temperature changed more than about 2 degrees, they seemed to go on.
Actually, questions for you boys. What head units are you using on your bikes? Jesse, you were an old Bolt 1?
The original Bolt.
Ooh, okay. And Chris, you were on the
630. I went from the 1040 Solar to that. So this is the iGPS 630, which I have.
So you know exactly where I'm coming from when I talk about the differences. Yeah. Okay.
Yeah. Which I'm quite biased in this because I really wanted it to work. Like I was fully buying into the it's going to disrupt the industry and, you know, this will shake it up type thing. And I initially was pretty bullish on it. But it's those, as we discussed, it's just those sort of around the edges features that just aren't quite there yet. So that's where I'm at. So I've gone back to the 1040, basically. Long story short.
Okay, right. Yep, you've gone back for that. Yep. Yeah, it is. It is that.
I've had a checkered past because I've tried to change. Maybe 4 years ago, I went to the Garmin. I think it was a 520, the one with the touchscreen. And then if it rained or a sweat dripped on it, it would change the screens.
820. I've got it somewhere here. Yeah, I know the one. I know the one.
Yeah, so I sold that and went back to my Wahoo because it was I couldn't use it.
I would much. I'm now in the touchscreen. I want mine to be touchscreen. I'm pretty good at now being able to lock the screen when I start to sweat or you know it starts to rain. So I'll you know choose a page, lock the screen. That's it. Job done. I just find navigate. I do navigate around the bike computers a lot. You know, change the music, check the. The Varia, change the Varia's flash, blah, blah, blah. So I move around the computer a lot. I use the UI. So to do that with the buttons is just I'm looking down a lot on the head unit. I don't like doing that. So I think touchscreen for me is a bit of a, it has to be. It's a no-brainer now.
Mm. Yep. And the solar panels. I mean, and then I saw Chris has one with the solar panels and that sold me. I was thinking,
really?
Well, if I have to charge the head unit, you know, I mean, I'm on an old Wahoo, so I probably get 3 rides. So maybe okay. I'm just...
Yep. Yeah, the battery life on the newer units, the 1040, I did the whole Festi 500 with the solar unit. I think I had something like 48% left after 16, 17 hours of riding. It's just phenomenal. That's the new standard.
Yeah. So I'd want one with the solar built in.
Now, Jesse, question for you about you've got a pool of athletes. What are the technological problems you're finding that are most common for your athletes? Is it power meter base? Is it they're having trouble with head units or is it software? What's a common or a couple of common problems that you have with your athletes getting clean data to you and getting good feedback to you using their bikes?
100% power meters. And it's funny because you mentioned SRM, Quark. I had a rider a week, 2 weeks ago. His Quark was reading 30 watts low. And that's not, I think it's reading low. I'm like, no, it's reading low. Go and get it checked out. So he had to send it back to Quark and they said, yeah, their calibration was off. You know, this rider in particular was a part of a team. So he probably got a bit of extra help in terms of getting that sorted. If that was just a regular person, maybe they'd never know. And they're just like, why am I riding so badly? And so that's even with the best regarded power meter still happens. It's happened with someone I coached that had Asiomas. Same thing. I went through like a good series of getting them to test it and it wasn't accurate. So.
Right. So just the source of the data is the problem. So head unit wise, do you have any trouble with head units or people are usually, they know how their head units work and can upload data to you?
No issues. Head units are, totally fine.
It's across the board with all different. What are you finding your athletes are using? Is it the Garmin, the Wahoo?
Everyone's on Garmin and Wahoo, really. Like,
okay, right, yep.
I hardly ever see anything other than Garmin and Wahoo, and those two work fine. Interesting.
So. Oh, what will happen to SRM if you want to put that one in?
Yeah, is it going to be relevant? Do you think, or
where are SRM heading? Are they becoming the Campagnolo of power meters?
Hmm.
They haven't done a lot recently.
Well, they already are irrelevant. I mean, who's buying an SRM unless you just want a nice-looking THM crank?
I mean, they've got 30-plus years of history of making power meters. They're now in the pedal space, the pedal power space, but pedals that drain battery just sitting there doing nothing, which is hopefully a problem they can solve in firmware, maybe. Look, I'd love
Hold
to
on,
see
sorry, but they're Shimano. Also just, that's because they've been around for 30 years doesn't mean they're accurate. We had guys on the team in 2019 and they had to keep sending them back and they had to recalibrate them down in Adelaide. They're more likely to read accurately, but they're not.
That's it. Yeah. The chances of them being correct is more accurate, more likely. Yeah. But what I'd love to see with that company is they seem to have stagnated a bit. They've gotten to the pedal side of things, but they haven't met the current new players in the market for price, performance, battery life, etc. If Shimano could just acquire SRM, I would go on holiday for at least 2 weeks and just celebrate that. Like if they could, Shimano could like just merge together. Even if Shimano want to buy Power to Max, cool. Power to Max are very similar. Like they haven't done much lately. I think they've just hired someone new in marketing because they've started their account. You know, when you follow an account for a few years and you're like, you forget about it. And then they start posting again. It's like coming back from the dead. This hand comes out of the coffin. Yes. Power to Max, I think have just done that recently. So they've started, but if Shimano could acquire SRM, Oh, the world would be such a better.
And Asioma, I think I've said this before, but Asioma should work with Campy. And that could be their, no, they're kind of linked.
Well, Shimano was still successful. That's why I'm saying Shimano. Because
that's a bad deal for Asioma, probably.
Yeah. They'd probably be more successful without them. I mean, they work hand in hand very well. But if you were to then brand the Ferrero Asioma as a Campagnolo pedal, people would be like, no, because that brand was. So I do see where you're going with that, though. And companies, well, we have seen the power meter come out from Campagnolo. It was announced. A lot of tech spec reviews of that. There was one technical review of that. The data looked pretty ordinary. Price was here in Australia. They're selling them for just under $3,800.
Hey, there you go.
Power meter, no commentary required on that.
That puts a Campy Super Record group set just into the sort of $8,000.
That's it. It'll sell. The unfortunate part of it will sell. And again, if I get a chance to test one, I will. And again, if it works, ones and zeros, yes, no, works, doesn't. Easy stuff, easy done. And for them, on a marketing point of view, like, don't tell us it's got 16 strain gauges and is this much and is this accurate. Just show us the data. Just get someone or someone else to show us the data. Easy. Anyhow, all fun and games. But anyways, SRM, Shimano, like, do this and we're done. That'll make life great.
Do you watch much cycling YouTube, Shane?
Do I be honest or not honest? I'll be honest. No, not really. I don't. If I need to know about it, I will. The GCN Power Meter video, obviously, that was a great discussion. Again, as I said, they didn't mention the names. But not a lot, really, because a lot of YouTube now, YouTube has changed a lot, guys. You'd know this very, very much so. YouTube has changed from, well, the algorithm changes. It'll promote stuff and not promote others. I'm still more of an informational. If I get to the end of I make videos that I want to watch or that I'd like to watch to learn about something. Hopefully at the end of my videos, you'll be in a better place to have a better experience on the bike or know a little bit more about a product. Some are just attention grabbing. I'm going to go ride across, this distance at this speed, at this power, and, look at me, attention grabbing. YouTube's become all about attention grabbing. That's the currency. And that just turns it to shit quite a lot. So not really. I'm into the nerdy stuff. Keith Wakeham's videos on power meters and the technology behind them. I follow mostly tech channels. My background in tech, where's AI going? Where's ChatGPT going? To be across that. So not a lot, unfortunately. How about yourselves? Any channels that you can recommend?
I know what you're saying, and it is a difficult one because I do get some motivation out of sometimes watching those videos of the I'm riding from here to here, blah, 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 look at me type thing. Because, yes, on the surface it is a pretty narcissistic view of a bike ride, but every now and again I will come away from that with not necessarily motivation to do something similar, but merely to just, I needed a kick to get out the door today and go for a ride. Right. And that's exactly what I needed. And that used to be for me watching pro cycling. Like, it really would. I would, like most of us in Australia, you would watch a replay in the morning or something. You'd catch the highlights in the morning and that would kind of give you the buzz to go race that evening or whatever it might be. I don't have that anymore, and that motivation can sometimes maybe come from a VC Adventures something or even just trying to think what was I even trying to watch this morning. Like, I was watching a NorCal cycling video of a crit there, and that kind of got me like, oh, I might go do the chop tonight, because suddenly all these guys are like, swapping off, and that was sort of got me going. And like, anytime firmware update 7.6 change log read. Oh, here we go, boys. We're on.
Excellent.
We're on for one. And like yourself, DC, like I just. The moment those Apple Pro Visions came out, we were like, yes, this is going to happen. Yep. We know he's going to do it. And of course he did. A good bit of tech stuff and that kind of thing as well. But
I actually like a bit of the trash TV of cycling YouTube. I kind of, it's a bit of a culture of itself. Obviously, if people don't want to get involved, they just want to learn about a trainer or whatever, or how to raise their FTP, and that's it. And they dip their head in and they come out. That's fine. But I mean, what we do on the show is we do, I don't know, what's the right word? Stir up or kind of curate a bit of what's the toing and goings of this person said this and what's, who made this video, and what way is the culture war going between, you know, Chinese brands and rim brakes and all different things. I think, yeah, I think there is, I enjoy a bit of that. Just, it's sort of like a whole little shit stirring thing of itself. And it's entertaining. I mean, it keeps people engaged. I think, I find interesting, you know, I'm going for a ride. I want to listen. I want to kill an hour on a podcast. Well, you know.
I like it when it's healthy discussion. It's great. When it dives to the depths of being abusive and, you know, personal attacks and things, that does get very draining, and it's across the board on all walks of life, I guess, even at any workplace as well. But I do see, Jesse, your shit takes and your shit stirring. I know exactly what you're up to with the algorithm, and it's doing quite well, I've got to say. So congratulations, guys, on the show in general. When it first started, we were sort of, I guess you guys were like, well, where's this heading? Let's just go. Let's just stick with it. But you guys have actually stuck with it. And that's really, it's gone the distance. And I think it's becoming super relevant now, especially with the topics you're bringing up, the guests you're having on. So even though I said I didn't watch a lot of cycling shows, this is one of them. I'll admit that.
But it's not playing the algorithm. Chris, like, we were literally,
oh, come on.
If we were out riding for 10 minutes in Centennial Park or 20 minutes, we would talk about that. Now, most people would be probably too embarrassed to film that, because maybe to chat, y'all, this isn't exactly professional or is a bit uncouth, however you might want to say it. But
yep.
I don't know. I think the show works because all other people
It's funny. We probably cut out more stuff that we don't want to talk about that is the topics of the day, but they just don't interest us. Because it's just not the stuff that, as Jesse, we always just ask each other the question of like, will we talk about this on a ride? We're like, probably not. We wouldn't bother. Whereas
that's why there's hardly any pro cycling chat, because we really,
unfortunately,
we're not recapping the stage. But
you're relevant at the moment. So the topics that are coming up are all relevant. And I think that's why the listeners and the viewers are gravitating towards it. Chris, your subs are doing really well. So things are boosting up in a time where a lot of others are just stagnating, and a lot of YouTube doesn't really go down much, but it just sort of, you know, people just get a bit lost in it. But this is doing really well, guys. Weekly, this is fantastic. Chris, will you be at Eurobike?
Yes. So the good segue, Shane. Jeez, you're a professional.
Thank you.
Look at that. Christ, I was just about to go that route. Yeah. So where are we? We're in July. I'm making my my Eurobike debut.
I can't wait to get you over there for you to first see it. You know, whenever I first see someone use a bit of tech that I'm like, this is good, this is bloody good. Like, put it on your bike, holy shit, that's you. If you see someone jump on a smart trainer for the first time and they're like, oh shit, the hills, you're like, yes. And then they start thinking about, well, and then everyone has that idea of what if you do this, 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 and their brains go at a million miles an hour. Chris, when you walk through the door at Eurobike, I don't want to set too much of a scene, but I will. You will walk in and go, holy shit. And then the first thing you'll think is, am I meant to be here? Am I real? Is this? And I said on the phone, Chris, a while back, absolutely. Absolutely. You're part of the industry. You're part of helping the industry move the needle. Jesse, your shit takes may not, but still we get people talking about things. Now, Jesse, will you be there or just Chris? Who's taking over?
It's just me this time.
Okay, Jesse, you can call it in. We can make sure Chris gets you across what he's seeing there, and you can give your takes on things. But it is an amazing show. It really is. And it's not about when you first go there. I was there 7 or 8 years ago. I've walked in. I'm like, what am I doing here? And then you get lost, and you kick some tires, and you walk around. But as soon as you get more and more contacts with the industry, and again, it's all about the people. So talking about working with brands, you don't work with brands, you work with people. And those are the people who will be there. And if they're not there, they're at the cafe there. If they're not there officially, they'll still be there. I think last year I met with more people who weren't officially at Eurobike. It costs a lot of money to be at Eurobike. So a lot of the companies just still go there and have all their meetings because, again, that's where everyone is. Absolutely phenomenal show. But you've got to go with a plan, and that plan is, if e-bikes are your thing, great. That's all you're going to be able to cover, because with 1,600 to 2,000 exhibitors, you ain't got time to talk to everyone. So for me, I go in with power meters, smart trainers, my vertical, you know, head units and things like that. And even then, I still can't cover it all. It is absolutely brilliant. So yeah, coming up, I guess. And I'm hoping to see some good content from you, Chris, on that as well.
I'll be certainly heavily leaning on you, Shane. You're the official. You're like the godfather of the shows. So yeah,
I was shown the way. I think the first show that I went to, I caught up with DC Rainmaker, and I remember he pulled out his Vector 3. He's like, check these out. And I even said to him, I said, hey, Ray, I'm going to be doing a few videos like you and be in the same space, but I don't want to compete. I don't want to step on your toes. Ray's like, yeah, cool. Let's go get a coffee. Yeah. So blah, 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 blah. And then that's just what it's all about. So you'll come across all the other creators there as well, doing their own thing. And people want their own takes on things. So even if we go there and duplicate content for everyone else, it's your take. And there's just so much to do. But yeah, if you get your media pass, you're good. I can show you where all the secrets are, especially the coffee, with the free coffee is. There we go. There we go. We can get coffee and breakfast, which is provided for media, which is great. But it is, get some walking shoes.
Yeah.
And be prepared to be on your feet for 9 hours per day for 3 or 4 days. Yeah. And don't over-equipment yourself. If you've got an iPhone, that's really all you need.
Okay.
iPhone and microphone. It used to be the blogger thing walking around. And you'll see GCN, again, very different business to what we do. Film crew, sound guy, presenter, dialogues, sponsor list to go visit. Yeah, they do the. And
see,
like,
that's
oh,
where I'm
shit,
thinking, Chris. Yeah. All right. Don't go show us a bike. What we could talk about is here's how GCN made their Eurobike day one video. Like, yeah. Isn't that interesting?
So I could just like follow them around.
We could do a show about and other people's Eurobike videos.
Them.
I think that'd be funny.
Mm.
Yeah, there you go. That's very meta. But I mean, they've got the mountain bike crew there, the road crew there, the tech crew there, and possibly you know, it's Spain. Maybe is it Japan? They have GCN in Japan, or they shut that down. They have just multiple coverage, like all angles. It's really good. Oh, there's my
look. Thank you so much for your time, Shane. Yeah, we're gonna obviously catch up again in July, and we'll be in contact before then. But thank you again for coming on.
Now, as I said before, guys, well done with the show. Keep it up. Keep at it, Jesse. Keep those hot takes coming in and the comments rolling. And at the end of the day, yeah, just keeping moving the needle forward here. Like, let's not stagnate in this industry, and let's hold everyone accountable to making good products. And when they do, let's celebrate that. That's what it's all about. And with that, 12 o'clock lunchtime, I'm out for a ride. Guys, are you riding today?
I am. Do the chop.
There we go. Jesse.
I'm motivated. Yeah,
we'll see.
Come on, Coyle. We'll see.
Maybe.
All right.
Go out and get a gravel ride in. They're great for you.
Good. Cheers, Shane.
Thanks, Shane.
Thanks again.
All right. Thanks, guys.
So a huge thanks to Shane GP Lama Miller. Obviously, we will put all the links to the videos and his channel down below, and we will see you real soon.
Mom deserves the best, and there's no better place to shop for Mother's Day than Whole Foods Market. They're your destination for unbeatable savings, from premium gifts to show-stopping flowers and irresistible desserts. Start by saving 33% with Prime on all body care and candles. Then get a 15-stem bunch of tulips for just $9.99 each with Prime. Round out Mom's menu with festive rosé, irresistible berry chantilly cake, and more special treats. Come celebrate Mother's Day at Whole Foods Market.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.